When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is One Heat Minute.
Drop of a hat, these guys will rock and roll.
What's your name?
Wayne Grove.
Look like gangbangers working the local 7-Eleven to you. Robbery, homicides, take me out.
Give me all you got! Give me all you got!
I do what I do best. I take scores. You do what you do best, trying to stop guys like me.
A podcast dedicated to all 170 minutes of Michael Mann's LA crime opus Heat, 1 minute at a time. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to One Heat Minute. I'm your host, Blake Howard, and joining me once again, as promised a few episodes ago, is Mr. Travis Johnson, the locomotive, the one-man writing army behind Australia's Film Inc. magazine. Hello, sir.
Hello. It is good to be back.
45 minutes we spent talking about 1 minute last time you were on.
I wonder if we can beat that.
We might be able to. Of what I said to you immediately as you finished, you went, how long were we talking about that 1 minute? I said, 45 minutes. And Tone Loke wasn't even in that minute. And that is exactly what we are presented with in the 47th minute of Heat. We are seeing Al Pacino as Detective Vincent Hanna coming to follow poor Albert Tarina. The lovely Albert Tarina. He said, my brother, Richard's going to talk to you. Is it Ricky Harris,
who died last year.
I didn't know that.
Heart attack at 51.
51.
I only found that out today.
Shit, I did not know that.
And this is obviously, but just one of them things.
One of those things.
But this is obviously the career highlight for him.
Big time.
Yeah, I took a look through his filmography, and he's been around.
Yeah, he's been around.
But this is,
he's so memorable in this, and also he has to face down in Hurricane Vincent, right? Mm. And he does it so admirably. Oh, Ricky
Their
Harris.
Dynamic in this is wonderful.
He's so good.
It's not in this minute, but Pacino's delivery of like, Albert, what's wrong with you? Drops me every time. I love Pacino's inflection on that
pretty
line.
Pretty fucking great.
The way he looks at him.
I love the setup, though. He goes, He looks at Ricky Harris. He looks at him, and Ricky Harris is like, no. Ricky Harris is so good right now. He's a little bit tiddly. He's having a great night with his friends.
He's like, he scored some points.
He's good.
I took care of it.
And he looks at, and so Vincent changes face from completely perplexed and frustrated to like complete fake. Oh wow, that was pretty fucking great.
Yeah.
And then it just goes back to normal.
Yeah.
That is.
I am over fucking well. Albert, what's wrong with you?
Every time. That's so great. Okay, so we are now at the 47th minute. We're gonna
46th minute, 46 to 47.
The 47th total minute, but 46th minute on your dial on the original theatrical version of Heat. Look, guys, especially if you're in Australia and you're listening to this, or you're in the States and you've recently bought the new 20th Century Fox release of the definitive edition of Heat.
Which I did.
Which Trav did. There is not going to be much difference between what we're viewing and what you're viewing. There's some, like, minor shaving and extending in a couple of scenes, and I think in some of the early scenes it's actually adding more. There's like a frame or two more in a couple of beats, so you might be put out. Beautiful colour. They've done some great colour upgrades. So what we're watching is not quite as crisp, perhaps, if you're watching that. But we are. When you listen to the minute that we cover, it might just be slightly out-synced on what you're watching, but it should be very close, so you won't have much to worry about.
You'll pick it up. You'll put it together.
Yeah.
You're pretty smart.
If you're listening now and you have listened to the 47 episodes of One Heat Minute, firstly, thank you. Thank you for so much for being a part of it. And two, you're obsessed. You're like me, and you're like Travis.
You're deep in this.
You're in deep. I am over fucking whelmed. And with that, we're going into 46 minutes with Vincent Hanna, Al Pacino, and my brother Richard, Tone Loc. Here we go.
Before we even get into that, there's this crew ripping rides all along the beach areas, all right? Now, the back of a trim shop on Irvine, if somebody wants to pay a little visit this weekend, they might find two turbos in a 911 slope.
You're looking to rid yourself of your competition.
Hey, I'm a good citizen.
I'm Donald Duck. So you got something to tell me or what?
Check this out, cuz. How do I know if I tell you what you need to know, you're gonna do what the fuck I need to get done?
Richard, man, Hannah is straight up, man. We do business all the time.
I ain't your cuz, you rat motherfucker. And you know, cuz I say so. After I hear what the fuck you gotta tell me.
Look here, man. You understand what I'm saying? I'd get killed for telling you this shit.
Killed walking your doggy.
This cat I was locked up with in Folsom.
Oh, it's a tragedy. This is the one tragedy of this show, is that sometimes right in the thick of something, you have to cut it off.
Don't quite get there. But we get some really interesting stuff here. I really like Tone Loc in this role.
I really like Tone Loc in this role too, because he's got a swagger, he's got an intensity, and he's not being asked to showboat too much. He just can be cool. Like, he just looks... He's there in the suit. He's actually trying. You can sort of see when he's sitting down, Ricky Harris's Albert is much more flair. And
yeah.
He's casing a bit. He's being observant about what's happening around him. And
yeah, I love the way he keeps looking around while he's talking to Vincent. He's just kind of scoping the club. And part of it's sort of being cool.
Yes.
But part of it's also a situational awareness.
Yeah. And what's...
Which Hannah then, we don't quite get it, but tries to disrupt.
Big time. Big time. And so you've got... I love Albert's face here. 46 minutes, 5 seconds. Albert is so happy. He's like, yeah, Vincent, look. He's looking right at Pacino. He's like, isn't this...
I brought you here and I've... Because what Hannah does as a character, and this is really smart, and this speaks to Michael Mann's research and command of his material, is Hannah's modus operandi when handling Albert is to always keep him on the back foot and always have him looking for approval.
Yes.
And this is Albert thinking he's got Vincent's approval, and it doesn't happen till after that we're talking about. Vincent shuts that the fuck down so funnily and savagely. which is great, because you like, what in real terms, Vincent needs Albert. Because Albert is a font of information.
Yeah.
Information is how you take down criminals. Okay?
Big time.
So the actual power dynamic is Albert's in a position of strength. And what Vincent has to do is make sure that Albert never realizes that for a second.
And also, I think Albert has almost got that sort of Stockholm syndrome ingrained in him, because there's not even a... There's no awareness, and that's what's so tremendous about the performance. There's no awareness whatsoever that he could ever get in a position of power.
Mm.
He's a dog. He's the lowest thing on the run. Like, Vincent has convinced him that he deserves nothing, and every little favor that he gets is due to Vincent allowing him to live this life this way.
Yeah, and I don't think the film ever, and correct me if I'm wrong, verbalizes or literalizes the exact nature of the leverage that Vincent has over Albert.
No.
I don't think it's ever like, you could go down for this, or I could pin this on you. It is simply the interpersonal dynamic, and we pull context out of just the performances between these guys, the dialogue they share, and the way man frames their relationship.
And there's a lot of stones on Vincent in here, and this is one thing I actually respect from just pure physical actors in space. Sometimes when you're dealing with a big physical, you know, imposing person, they try and make them smaller. Sometimes when you're dealing with a small actor, they try and make them feel bigger in the scene. And I think what's cool about Heat is that they don't really do that with Pacino's Vincent. He doesn't feel bigger than anyone. His entire crew is taller than him.
Yeah.
And what's cool here
but he's like a bantam, you know? The way he throws his arm around.
I was just about to say that, which is that so Richard leans in. You can see that Tone Loc's a little bit taller than him.
Yeah.
And he comes
in. He's kind of doing this conspiratorial thing, like, I'm going to tell you some stuff.
He's not actually looking him directly in the eyes. He's telling him stuff. He's facing around. He's looking around. And then there's this great moment where he sort of gets, when Vincent's sort of antagonizing him, going, what are you talking about? This is ridiculous. You know, just tell me something. Stop trying to get rid of your competition. That's bullshit. I don't want to hear it. And then it's about 46 minutes, 28 seconds. Tone, like, gets in his face, looks at him right in his face, and he's clearly a bigger man, and he looks intimidating in this moment. He's real up close and personal.
Yeah.
And Vincent's reaction is like noogieing a nephew. Like, he literally throws his arm over his head and pulls him in, 46 minutes, 41 seconds, and he's just nursing his head like, I'm going to lecture you like you're a baby. Like, I'm pulling you in. And he's in the middle of, like, an all urban African American club.
And
he's,
then you get this shot where Vincent is so much bigger than Turnlock, than Richard in this frame. Look at that.
Yes.
Look at the
46 minutes, 43 seconds. But when he brings him in close, it's like this little guy has now grown in stature, especially the way that man frames it. And so that's what I love about this scene. It starts off sort of Richard's the one who's sort of, he's hunched up. He's casting his eyes to the side, and then,
and he's defining the interaction. He's defining the space, and he's sort of, he's very much dictating how he's going to interact with Vincent. And Vincent just changes that up completely. Just goes, no, come fucking here.
Come here. And poor Albert's like, he's been nodding like, look at all this. And he just grabs his brother as well. And he's like, I'm going to treat you like you're nothing as well. You're going to fucking tell me everything. And so what's cool here is, guys, just in the context of the film, this is like 3 a.m. These guys are hot on the run. It's about 48 hours after one of the biggest heists in L.A. You've got to think about this. 48 hours.
Oh, Vincent hasn't slept.
Vincent hasn't slept yet at all. So we've watched him go in at 2 or 3 a.m. He's following up a lead. Albert didn't get back to him in the original case, and this could just be nothing. So also, Vincent has to, and if we even just go back to earlier on in the minute, Vincent is being, like, he's treating this with about as much respect as it deserves from the outset, but he is still very wily. Like, he still is, he doesn't let things go past.
Now, we see Vincent pop some gum.
Yes.
Just before he grabs Richard.
I love where you're going with this. Go.
He's been awake for 48 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Cocaine, which is never literally or explicitly in the film. I think it's been a while, but either an interview or a commentary with Pacino.
Yes, so...
where he was like, no, he's totally on cocaine.
So to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Heat, Christopher Nolan, who is perhaps as big a fanboy of Heat as I am.
I'd say that's inarguable.
It's inarguable. He made The Dark Knight, which is basically Heat with superheroes, so I think he gets it. He did a panel, an amazing panel, like a once-in-a-lifetime panel of all of the key performers in the film, including Michael Mann as the director. And Pacino talked about Vincent Hanna being a guy who took coke, and it was actually in the film. And in fact, literally in the minutes that are preceding this exact minute that we're watching, Vincent walks up to a security guard and he goes, give me all your money. And
that's right, yeah.
And in that moment, in that very moment, revealed on this podcast by the amazing Pasquale Buber, the editor of Heat, that scene was longer, and Vincent cops cocaine, takes it before he comes into this club.
Wow. Holy crap.
So, we are seeing a fallout of a guy who actually, from cocaine use, is more about unstoppable momentum.
Mm.
He is almost like, it's almost like he's fashioning his own version of mania so that he can operate without sleep.
Well, you get that in a lot of Vincent's interactions with people, his complete disdain for the norms of social dynamics.
Okay? Yes.
Like the way he gets up in the grill of Hank Azaria's character. You know?
Oh, great. He's great.
You know, give me all you got. All that stuff, you know, the way he... to the point where the only person he shows complete respect to is Macaulay.
Yeah.
Like, he's good with these guys on the robbery homicide team. But that is very much a boss and employee relationship.
Yeah, there's
despite the fact that they socialize together, it is very
When they're on the job, those guys like click in, you know, perfectly in sync in a hierarchy that works for them.
Yeah,
and that's normal. Like those guys, you know, it's it, the action of the job is the juice for those guys too, which is so great about those sort of complementing, you know, although on different sides of the law, that sort of complementing way that each crew works in their dynamic, which is phenomenal. But yeah, so I have always thought about Vincent. You know, some people have taken the revelations that potentially Vincent was a coke addict, or at least as a coke user in Heat, as, oh, that explains his mania. And I would say no. His mania, exactly as Trav was outlining, and particularly in this scene, because it's really relevant about what we're just watching with Richard and Albert, is it is all about him keeping whatever criminal that he's dealing with on their toes.
Yeah, off balance.
Completely off balance. He wants to talk to them sweetly for a minute and then go insane, because he knows if he cannot be pegged by them and he remains unpredictable, then they can never... There's no comfort in your skin. And he knows that. That's what the great thing about Macaulay is, and after all the praise that he gives him and they hear about one another, Neil is not going to be intimidated by Vincent's nonsense.
No,
he knows
no.
It's an act, but someone like Albert, poor Albert,
yeah.
Poor Albert is beyond the fact that it's an act at the moment.
Yeah, because like Richard is reasonably professional,
yes,
but he is a low-level dude.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like he's a worker. He's not a player.
And especially because he's trying to, he thinks in this moment that if I give a cop from robbery homicide at 3 a.m. in the morning a score for a chop shop,
yeah.
Vincent's like, I don't care about you taking away your competition. That's not a blip on my radar.
Yeah, it doesn't even register.
No, and what's so great is he's like, and then even Albert sycophantically goes, and it's at about 46 minutes, 30, you know, 36, 37 seconds. Oh, no. Albert's like, no, me and Vincent do business all the time, man. He's so deluded. Isn't he a sweetheart? He's
a sweetheart. I really love
him. Look, if anyone in... And I know that this is so ridiculous to even think, but just say in a world of one Heat minute that someone in Ricky Harris's family or friend circle ever listens to this show, and particularly ever listens to this episode... Rest in peace and pass on to his family the level of admiration that everyone who has talked about his character and his performance in this movie has for him. And we're lighting a candle on this podcast for his incredible performance as this guy who's just basically been abused into being used as a criminal informant in the worst possible way. And, you know, if you talk to a cop, that, you know, cops have got a different outlook for criminal informants. I think almost it is a psychological thing for them to say, I need to keep this criminal informant as the lowest rung on the ladder. And
yeah,
to keep
beyond the shadow of a doubt.
Beyond the shadow of a doubt. Yeah. So, yeah, he's so fantastic. And I love how he's like, no, but Richard, we do business.
No,
you don't.
You really don't.
You don't, Albert.
He's so deluded. He's so trapped. It's Stockholm Syndrome in a weird way. You're quite right.
It's great.
But it's a great performance. I'm certainly not bum-noting the actor by any way, shape, or form.
The character.
It's
the character.
It's a really, really strong performance. I think it's got a lot of flavor. It's got... a lot of interesting layers and ticks to it.
And affectation.
It just works.
If we go back, you are introduced to Albert in the middle of a chop shop at... I learned from Mr. Garth Franklin from Dark Horizons. It's about, a couple of hours outside of the center of LA in a chop shop. And he's eating with silverware... surrounded by dirt immigrants, and he just after walking through like a dog fighting pit, and he's there in a little tweed suit. He's just full of affectation, and it's so odd, but it's so him. And it's like, I'm the sophisticated one, I'm doing business, and it's that these guys, both Richard and Albert, are these low level guys that are aspirational and think, oh, In Albert's mind, he's thinking, I've got a relationship with the police, and that's going to protect my interests in the business. That's going to keep me afloat. But, you know, I think Richard's a little bit more street savvy.
A little bit more grounded, yeah. Now, something I want to talk about. What's the music in the background? I have no idea. See, one thing I'm always concerned about when middle-aged, affluent white men do club or subculture scenes...
Yes.
...is how they handle... Okay. The subculture, the culture, the subculture, the music. the behavior of the background performers and all that. Now, Mann in this doesn't give us a lot of context. He keeps his shots fairly tight.
Yes.
You know, it's a lot of close-ups. Even when Pacino's coming into the club, we don't see a whole heck of a lot.
No.
So this doesn't register to me as a white Australian dude.
No.
In his 40s as false, but I'm wondering if anyone can shed any light on how accurate this may or may not be, given Mann's famous love of verisimilitude and accuracy.
And this definitely was a real club. And definitely...
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely a real club in LA. What I might do is I'm going to leave a gap. I'm going to leave a gap in this, and I'm going to come back and I'm going to drop some knowledge in about the specifics, but just for traffic, just because I've lost it in my veritable cornucopia of heat facts, this is definitely a real club in Koreatown, which is where it was shot, and it was an predominantly African American club, and it was a live club that he just went into and did the shooting and got in and out of there fairly quickly. And
that is one thing which is remarkable about Heat, is that it's all location work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In LA. Which the only incentive for the longest time, especially, you know, in the studio films of the 90s, because they hadn't broken out of it. It was usually like, let's go to New York to get into a city. But he didn't need... He's like, nope, I've got every studio in the world, but I want to shoot locally. And this is definitely part of that flavor. So I'm going to leave a gap now. Now you should be back after that knowledge drop. But yeah, so no, it definitely is a club that's there. But look, Tone Loke here, great. Richard's cool. I think Richard's savvy. I think...
He's a few rungs up the ladder from Albert. I mean, that's...
Yeah, he's worked with bigger crews. And he's trying to get something. I'll give you someone else, you do for me. And Vincent is clear that is not his intent.
Yeah, Richard's trying to establish a quid pro quo relationship. Vincent is not about that at all.
No.
Okay, he's got Albert. There is no quid pro quo there. There is just Albert does what he wants. And Albert gets to be Albert.
Albert gets to be Albert. He can eat with his fine dining gear, in his dirt patch, and I'll allow it. And bang, yeah, look at this. It's so beautiful. 46 minutes, about 44 to 40 seconds to 50 seconds. He's there, and Loke actually has to, you know, get him off him. You know, you're gonna get me killed if I give you this information. Get killed.
Loke, Richard is trying to establish his own space again.
Yeah.
And his own, not so much dominance, because I think at this point he realizes he's not dominating this interaction, but at least his own sort of stake.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's not going to capitulate the way Albert does, like a whipped dog.
Yeah. And what's great here as well is that it's almost better at the beginning of the scene for both Richard and Albert, because Vincent was uncaring. But I think even in this, even though he doesn't know, we don't get the amazing drop, this wonderful thread that is left behind that's coming up in the following minute. I think in this moment, it's like 46 minutes, 52 seconds, Vincent casts his eyes over to Tone Loke.
And there's a respect there.
There's a respect, but also I think you now have my attention. You may actually have some information. This isn't going to be a waste of my time. And I actually think that it's like here where you go, oh, he's turned on, or you know, you had my curiosity, now you have my attention. And it's like this moment where he's now not just being a heel, as you put it, like a whipped up.
Focusing on this film to such a minute degree, you realize the second-by-second internal character changes going on.
Yeah,
which is extraordinary. People think acting is easy. It's fucking not.
No.
I have made the terrible mistake of putting myself in front of camera a couple times. I don't recommend it, okay? The worst hack on Home and Away is a better actor than
act
you,
the pants,
random
act,
friend.
Act the pants off of me or Trav any day, I think.
It is tough, tough, tough work.
Yeah.
It requires a level of focus, concentration, and mental gymnastics, which is beyond the average person. So when you look at something like this, where you've got guys like Pacino and De Niro, who you know, were the greatest actors of their generation for a reason. You can see the way they manipulate their internal psychological landscape in order to get an external effect for the viewer. I don't think that is specifically deliberate. I don't think anyone, like, you would have to be a supercomputer to be able to go, well, if I think this, I'll look like that, and then the camera will pick this up. But you can definitely see the process going on. I mean, this frame of Pacino we're looking at right now is stunning. It's absolutely stunning. I can't get over it.
And
also, Pacino's hair is amazing.
It's looking good.
It's so good.
It's looking good as Vincent. He's there. But that's what I love. That's the clue that I haven't really picked up on before is it's the fact that Richard has stood up to him in some way.
Yeah.
That has actually triggered a piece of attention, you know, and he's joking, get killed walking your doggy, and he's still antagonizing him. He's absolutely antagonizing, but it's just that frame of like,
but he's kind of stepped back a bit as well. It's not he's not using the technique he would use on Albert. Albert, he fucking beats down.
Yes.
And Richard, he has to negotiate with a bit.
And what I love, even though we're running into the end of the minute, Tone Loki's telling him something here. And what's so great and what's coming up in the hilarity of the next moment
Tone... It's a big-ass peacock. big-ass peacock right here.
And it's... He's telling Vincent something and he's looking away from him. And that's what's cool about the Tone Loke performance as Richard, because he is now scared of what he's saying.
Yeah. No, he's had to put out... Because originally he was just going to go with the... I think he was just going to go with the chop shops.
Yeah, he's going with the chop shop bullshit.
This, now he's got this other thing. And it's also interesting in terms of building up... as I talked about the last minute I was on, the fabric, the texture of the criminal milieu, the idea that this information's floating around out there. It's not like Vincent is fucking Sherlock Holmes and says, well, I think that Michael Cerrito might move in these circles. So I'll go and talk. It's just like, okay, this is almost a random hookup.
Yes.
And he's like, I know a guy. And, well, you know, I know of a dude.
And also, there's, you know, just to sort of branch out into the fallout of this minute and the next minute, is that when Vincent talks about Cerrito, he's like, look at Cerrito, track him. See who he goes and talks to. When he talks to them, they've got jackets. I want to know where they are. If they eat together, I want to know who they are. And so it then becomes a methodical and very procedural slog.
Yeah, it turns into a grind.
It turns into a grind. And it's like we want everything up and running just because, again, we're still in within about, you know, 48, 72 hours of this massive heist and multiple multiple deaths and the security guard deaths. And so it's in this moment that Vincent has his attention, and that's what I think plays for the comedy in the next moment, is because he's flipped the switch. You may actually have something to tell me here.
Yeah.
And when he sort of goes, and in Richard's, this is Richard not being in a relationship like a Stockholm syndrome with Albert, he's like, I know a guy, and he starts to tell him about, I know a guy who, you know, used to, you know, love action, and when I saw him, he said he wasn't doing anything, which means for me,
he must be doing
And
Albert, what's wrong with you?
I'm going to enjoy that. That's what's great about this. I'm going to enjoy that in the next minute so much. It's so great.
So there's a couple other movies I want to talk about quickly. One is, it's another movie, 11 years older than he shot in LA, which involved a nightclub scene.
Mm-hmm.
Called The Terminator.
Oh, man.
Little Jimmy Cameron. Now, the story about the nightclub...
Little
Jimmy Cameron. Bless him.
He grew up to be an angry man.
He did, but a fantastic underwater explorer, and I respect that.
Incredible. Incredible filmmaker.
Mm. I hope he still is, because apparently we're getting about 70 new Avatar films.
Terminator 2. That's if you've given that to the universe...
You're good. And The Abyss. The Abyss.
Love The Abyss.
Anyway, point.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.